From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025. An Ecuadorian man arrested earlier this summer in Maine has been released from ICE detention following a judge's order. Ori Snyder has more.
Edgar Vicente Bermeosicha arrived at the U.S. southern border in 2024, fleeing persecution in Ecuador. According to court records, he presented himself to border agents and was eventually released into the country pending a court date. But on July 28th of this year, he was arrested by Border Patrol agents while traveling to a job site in Maine. He was later transferred to ICE custody in Texas. On Friday, a federal judge in Maine ruled the government had not provided adequate opportunity for Bermeosicha to challenge its decision to re-detain him, a violation of his Fifth Amendment right to due process, and ordered his release. According to court filings from government lawyers, he was released the next day. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
A new child care center opening in Brunswick this week aims to ease the child care burden for one of the state's largest employers. Nora Sachs has more.
More than 80 people of all ages turned out to celebrate the opening of the new Early Learning Center, which, starting this week, is offering child care for children aged 3 months old to 5 years old. The new 10-classroom facility is a partnership between the Bath Area Family YMCA and Bath Ironworks. It provides up to 120 priority spots for employees at the shipyard. Charles Crew is the president of General Dynamics Bath Ironworks.
We're not just building ships. We are sustaining families and building future shipbuilders. And we hope to get a lot of future shipbuilders coming through the child care center.
According to the Bath Area YMCA, not all of the 132 spots are filled, and there are still community spots available for toddlers and preschoolers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nora Sachs.
The state Supreme Court has strengthened protections from self-incrimination in a decision last week. The court ruled that a suspect in police custody must explicitly agree to waive their right against self-incrimination. And if a suspect makes an unclear statement, the law enforcement officers must stop the interrogation and clarify. Carol Garvin is the legal director for the ACLU of Maine.
So essentially, this ruling means police aren't allowed to guess. They aren't allowed to just continue on with interrogation when the suspect might be invoking those really important constitutional rights.
In the same ruling, the court overturned a drug trafficking conviction against Derek McLean. The court found he did not waive his right against self-incrimination, and his statements to law enforcement should not have been included in his 2020 trial. The case will now return to the trial court for further proceedings. Roughly 6,500 people attended a rally in Portland on Labor Day headlined by Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders as part of his nationwide Fighting Oligarchy tour. The political events are a response to the Trump administration, but they're also shaking up nominating contests for Democrats in next year's midterm elections. That includes the Maine U.S. Senate race, where Sanders has endorsed Graham Platner, a virtually unknown candidate whose populist appeal could disrupt establishment Democrats' plans for the race. Steve Missler has more.
Platner has been a candidate for exactly 2 weeks, but his viral launch video and the national media attention have already made him a source of intrigue for Democratic voters like Sarah Marcotte, who made the trip to the Cross Insurance Arena from Bangor.
You know, I'd read a little bit about him, and I think that his journey to politics is so interesting, and I think that because he's coming from outside the political establishment, he has a lot to offer in terms of, a unique viewpoint that isn't necessarily, straightforwardly for either party, but imagining a better future.
And that non-traditional perspective is something that Catherine Rudnicki, also from Bangor, says the Democratic Party needs.
The established Democratic Party always kind of supports people that are very centrist and don't really seem to be for anything except for being we aren't Republican.
Complaints about establishment Democrats have intensified during the first 8 months of President Trump's second term. The party is hemorrhaging voters, and polls indicate that those who still identify with Democrats think the party is weak and ineffectual. Enter Platner, an oyster farmer and veteran whose only political experience is becoming harbor master in his hometown of Sullivan. Yet he walked onto the stage Monday, having already declared the war in Gaza a genocide, Medicare for all a must, and unions the path for prosperity for working people. And he's equally critical of Democrats as he is of Republicans.
We have two parties that want the votes of working people, but neither has done anything lately to earn it.
Plattner has already held a series of town halls in Maine, but his 20-minute speech Monday was his first before a big audience. He recycled a few lines from his viral videos and social media posts, but the crowd was with him during his sharp critique of Republican Senator Susan Collins.
Now, Susan Collins's charade is wearing thin. This is the easiest applause lines in these speeches.
He said Collins is using her moderate image as cover.
No one cares that you pretend to be remorseful as you sell out to lobbyists. No one cares while you sell out to corporations, and no one cares while you sell out to a president who are all engineering the greatest redistribution of wealth from the working class to the ruling class in American history.
But Plattner isn't just running against Collins. He's also running against the Democratic Party establishment. That same establishment has another candidate in mind to take on Collins, Governor Janet Mills. Mills hasn't said she'll run, but Plattner has made it clear he won't bow out if she does. He didn't mention the governor by name on Monday, only by inference, while framing Collins as a tool of a broken political system built and controlled by the wealthy.
And Maine deserves an alternative who is not at risk of being mistaken as being beholden to the same status quo that she is.
By aligning himself with Sanders, Plattner has made it clear that he will not travel the same path as most of Collins' previous challengers. In fact, he's using Democrats' past failures to defeat her as a rationale for voters to pick him during next year's primary. Troy Jackson, one of several Democratic candidates running to replace Mills when she's termed out as governor, chose the same lane 10 years ago. Back then, he introduced Sanders in the same Portland arena when the Vermont Independent was vying for the Democratic presidential nomination. Now, Jackson, the former president of the Maine Senate, is doubling down on Sanders' platform, exploited workers versus the ruling class.
To them, that is what we are, nobodies. But we know better. We know they aren't coming to save us. They never have, and they never will. And we know that the only way to build our future, the future they want, that we want, is to build it for ourselves.
Sanders, who will turn 84 in just a few days, is no stranger to such rhetoric. He's been talking that way for decades. But as he spoke for 45 minutes on Monday, he conveyed a sense of urgency. He talked about Trump's inauguration in January, when he was surrounded by the richest people in America.
These guys, trust me, believe that they have the right to rule, and democracy is an impediment to their success. They want it all. They want it all, and they don't care who they step on in order to get even more and more.
But Sanders said their power is no match for the movement he, Plattner, Jackson, and other insurgent candidates are building.
Not only can we stop them, not only will we stop them, but for the future of this country and, in fact, the world, we must stop them.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Friends and colleagues of Bill Diamond are describing the former Secretary of State and longtime lawmaker as a statesman who devoted the final years of his life to the issue of child welfare. Diamond, who was from Windham, died over the weekend at the age of 80. Kevin Miller has more.
Bill Diamond worked for decades as a teacher, principal, and superintendent, primarily in schools around his hometown of Windham. But he would also become a well-known figure under the Statehouse dome during the roughly 40 years he served in the Maine House and Senate or as Secretary of State.
He was a mentor to many, and he was always a teacher to everybody, and he made everybody feel equal, didn't make any difference which side of the aisle he was on.
Representative Jeff Timberlake is a Republican from Turner who remembers meeting Diamond soon after his first election to the main house back around 2010.
He really taught me how it takes both sides of the aisle to make it work.
Another Republican, Patrick Corey, represented Diamond's hometown of Windham in the main house while the Democrats served in the Senate. Like Timberlake, Corey credits Diamond with schooling him on the oftentimes messy legislative process and the importance of bipartisanship.
Bill was not only a constituent, he was, a friend and a colleague and an incredible mentor.
But some Republicans criticized his performance as Secretary of State during a 1993 ballot-stuffing scandal involving staff of longtime House Speaker John Martin. In the aftermath, Diamond implemented an overhaul of the recount process that mandated locked metal ballot boxes and that all recounts be conducted in a centralized location. That process is still used today. After returning to the legislature, Diamond stayed involved in some of the issues he managed as Secretary of State. He wrote a law after the 2016 elections that aimed to better protect voters from intimidation at the ballot box. He was also the lead author of the bill making it illegal to talk on a handheld cell phone while driving. But the issue that he's arguably best known for in recent years is child welfare. He helped lead the legislature's investigations into several high-profile abuse deaths of children whose families were in the child welfare system. And since leaving the Senate, Diamond formed a nonprofit called Walk a Mile in Their Shoes that is aimed to continue pressuring the Maine Department of Health and Human Services to reform the child protection, foster care, and family support programs. Last year, he discussed his group's recommendation that the department add more clinicians, paralegals, and other support staff to help overburdened caseworkers.
Every case should have a team approach, and people have told us that up and down the state. No longer can we rely or expect one caseworker to go in and do all the work that they do. And especially when they have overload such as 30 or 40 cases when they should have 12.
Timberlake, who served with Diamond on the legislative committee that has spent years investigating a slate of child deaths, says Walk a Mile in Their Shoes will continue the work that Diamond started.
I think Bill made a difference there. I think they listened, they see it, and they knew he wasn't going away and he was going to be a person that was going to chase this to the end, and that's what he did.
Diamond's family has not disclosed his cause of death and asked for privacy, but he posted on his nonprofit's website earlier this year that he was stepping aside temporarily to deal with a, quote, challenging medical issue. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Congress Street has long been the commercial hub for the city of Portland. It's where you'll find City Hall, Monument Square, the Public Library, and the Arts District, as well as many shops and restaurants. Vacancy rates downtown, though, have risen considerably in recent years. While just a few blocks away, the city's Bayside neighborhood is sprouting breweries, coffee shops, fitness centers, and housing developments. But there are efforts underway to revitalize the downtown and fill some of those empty storefronts. Carol Bousquet reports.
On a warm summer night, the Bayside Neighborhood Association is hosting a celebration of growth in one of Portland's most ethnically diverse neighborhoods. Association President Tom Blackburn says that for years, Bayside, home to a large concentration of social service agencies, was the least developed part of the Portland Peninsula. But that's changing.
East Bayside has, I don't know how many breweries over there, but it's booming. So there is just this influx of business that is great, you know, and it provides some diversity, some income, some opportunities, growth opportunities, and things of that sort.
City records show more than 55 new breweries, cannabis shops, restaurants, and a gym have been licensed in Bayside in just the last 2.5 years.
So let's find our van here. We're going to see the van. It's going to go right above the knees.
A new fitness club that opened in May, Salute, has expanded its Pilates and other fitness classes to meet demand from members.
It's growing so fast. I think it's word of mouth. People come in off the street. We've added another 60 classes, I think, in the past couple months.
Dorian Lewin, Salute's owner, says she started the business in a smaller space 6 years ago, but outgrew it and built out this 15,000 square foot space in Bayside with funding help from the city and other partners.
Once we have that, we use our ball.
A just a few blocks away, empty storefronts are peppered along Congress Street. At one point this summer, the vacancy rate reached 18%, more than three times the average for the area. Landlord Ed Gardner says Congress Street has struggled in recent years with an unhoused population, some sleeping in storefronts. He says it drove one of his longtime tenants, who operated a specialty spa, to leave Portland altogether.
She would come to me weekly to say, I can't walk out my back door without finding 20 or 30 needles every single night. And the workers just aren't feeling safe here. They can't get out the back door because there's six or seven people using drugs.
But there are efforts underway to address the problem. In July, the nonprofit group Portland Downtown launched a Downtown Ambassadors program to clean up trash, needles, and graffiti between the city's popular Old Port District and Congress Street. Ambassador Frankie Opute is painting over graffiti while his colleague power washes outside the Cross Insurance Arena.
So I'm just going around and looking for graffiti or something to paint. I believe to work together, make Portland sparkly.
The city is taking other steps, such as offering landlords $20,000 interest-free loans to upgrade vacant storefronts. And it's considering a vacancy ordinance that would charge a fee to landlords who leave a property vacant for more than 6 months, unless they agree to install artwork in the vacant space. The police department has set up a new community policing post on Congress Street, and social service groups have launched a pilot program to distribute food to unsheltered residents in a downtown location away from Congress Street. Portland officials say that despite the recent doldrums, they are optimistic about the prospects for the downtown and for the city as a whole.
I'm hopeful about the future, and I think, you know, some of that is because we have still a whole lot of development in the pipeline, and that development is going to cut across a range of opportunities.
The city's housing and economic development director, Greg Watson, says he believes commercial and housing development in both the Downtown Arts District and Bayside will have a stabilizing influence on all businesses in the city. And there may be some signs of change. At least seven new businesses have recently leased downtown vacant properties. Among them, coffee and bagel shops, supper clubs and markets, and a new hotel. There are more than 7,000 business permits on file for the entire city of Portland. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, wildlife and public health. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.